This is Osen Cocktail.
Hi, I'm Kirby Plessis. I have 20 years experience in intelligence analysis and OSINT, and I'm the founder of Plessis.net. You can find me online on Twitter as Kerbster.
And I'm Cynthia Navarro, and I've been a private investigator since 1979 and went into using OSINT for my investigations in 1997. You can find me on Twitter at Finnegan's Way.
All right. Welcome to another episode of OSINT Cocktail. Today, we are talking with Micah Hoffman. Micah, thank you so much for coming back. We should have had an episode out for you in the last series, and totally my fault. I messed that up. But I just want to say welcome back and thanks for coming back.
Hey, thanks for having me back. And it feels like the first time. It's awesome.
And of course, Cynthia here is with us as well.
Hello, everyone.
So, Micah, the idea behind this podcast is, of course, that we like to find out, you know, what other professionals in OSINT world, OSINT universe, are also using as far as like what their normal hardware and software lineup is. We find that there's so much variety based on the variety of cases, the different personalities, that sort of thing. So can you explain to us kind of what your hardware setup looks like?
Sure. And exactly what you just said, the variety of cases really, for me, determines where I'm going, what I'm doing, what tools I'm using, and what systems I'm using too. Right now, I'm doing a lot of missing persons cases because of who I work with. And I have an old Android phone that I use for contact exploitation. I also have a desktop computer that I'm using for just all my normal type of driver things, business apps, but also virtual machines and other things, which I know that gets into the software portion. The desktop, and I have also a laptop, as you know, sometimes you need a different perspective or to be VPN'd into one or the others. That's my general setup, but I also have a whole bunch of other devices because I'm one of those geeks that just loves toys. It just depends on what I want to pull out that day.
That's great. Because I was wondering, going to ask you about, why aren't you using an iPhone? Is there a particular reason you had said Android?
Yeah, there honestly isn't. The old phones that I have are ones that family members have donated as they've upgraded to iPhones. I've inherited several versions of Android devices. So I just took the fastest of the old ones, and I'm using that because it's free.
I wanted to ask, you know, you talked about a desktop and a laptop. Do you have any favorite brands that you use? And also, do you use external monitors? What kind of other things do you have?
As far as brands go, nope, I don't. I think the one that I have right now is one that is kind of not a Franken desktop, but it's definitely one that was assembled by somebody else. And it's got a whole bunch of really nice components in there. As far as monitors, didn't get to monitors, keyboards, mice. I didn't know how deep you wanted to go, but monitors, I like lots of screen real estate. So I have a nice 49-inch curved monitor on my desk, which is just wonderful. And as far as keyboards go, I like keyboards that are useful to me. First off, mechanical keyboards over the other types. And then secondly, I like the ones that have macros in it that allow me to do stuff. My current keyboards are a Logitech, an old Logitech keyboard that has some extra macro keys on the left-hand side. That's something that I look for because my left hand is not on my mouse. My right hand is on my mouse, and I want to keep my right hand on my mouse. With my left hand, I can hit I have got a macro key for copy and for one for paste, one for delete. Just very quickly, I can get at those keys and keep my other hand on the mouse. And then my mouse has multiple buttons as well. I love Logitech devices. It's just who I am, what I do. I've got a couple of these MX Master 3s and some other ones as well.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right, so I guess we can move on to software. So let's start with the big stuff. Operating systems, which ones work best for you? Do you use any of the specialized ones, especially the specialized OSINT ones that are out there for free? And then, of course, virtual machines, that sort of thing.
Yeah, so I've gone the whole gamut. Years ago, I used to only be Linux because I had total control over everything. And I knew that there was less telemetry and other things. And what I found over the years is that all the operating system have some level of telemetry. And so when we start looking at what makes me more normal when I'm surfing the web and all, I'm looking for those operating systems that share that kind of data more naturally. So yes, I use Linux, but my daily driver is a Windows box, Windows 10, 11. I have both of them. I don't use Macs. I just never got into those operating systems. And also they cost a little bit more than Windows boxes. So there was always that as well. So Windows operating system. And then for my virtual machines, I do have virtual machines. I also use virtualized appliances that are out there in the world, like Chasm, K-A-S-M, which is a wonderful, wonderful set of cloud-hosted virtual appliances. I pay for that, and I can just pop open a Google Chrome browser, or I can pop open a Linux desktop really quickly from their IPs. And then for me, I actually have Windows virtual machines that I run, but the way that my OSINT's been moving lately, I'm moving kind of up the OSI model stack from, you know, hands-on like Python tools to do all this enumeration to browsing people's Instagram and TikTok pages. And for that, I just need a web browser with a couple of plugins. Right now I'm using Chrome for that because some of the plugins that I like using are only Chrome-based, but I use Firefox, I use WaterFox, I even use Mulvad browser as well, all those different ones.
Okay. What are some of the plugins that you're using on Chrome?
Well, my favorite plugins range from, they're all things that, as Chris Poulter would say, give me efficiencies. For instance, Search by Image by Armand Desant. He just makes great tools that keep me private. uBlock Origin for an ad blocker. Many years ago, I did some testing on Ghostery and AdBlock Plus and all these ad blockers to see which ones actually block the most ads and allowed me to block other elements. And so uBlock Origin really fit the bill and has been wonderful. So using that on some browsers, because sometimes you want those ads and you want those that normal tracker flow, which makes the social media platforms feel a little bit better about your visit. Also, I love a tool by Wii Robots, I think. It's called Instant Data Scraper. It's absolutely a fabulous tool. I mean, back from when you and I were doing OSINT Curious, it's still a tremendous tool for just grabbing whatever you have on the screen.
One of my favorites.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's a whole bunch of specialist tools that I'll turn on or off as I'm doing my work. Just depends.
Okay. Do you recommend any specific VPNs or virtual machines for your type of work?
Yeah. So actually, I'm sorry, I didn't mention this. As far as virtual machines, I have used Kali Linux. I have used Hunix and Trace Labs and a bunch of other ones. And what I find is that there's just way too much installed on there. You know, I'm not using Instaluder or Instaloader or any of those tools. Most of the tools that I need are web pages or are accessible through JavaScript and not, they don't have to be Python based. If we take that out of the equation, my virtual machine that I use most often is just a Xubuntu, that's Xubuntu desktop system. That's version 22.04. And the only app that I have on it, aside from Python, is a browser. And that's all I really need much of the time. Like I said, I've tried other virtual machines, and what I find is, you know, me setting up a Xubuntu system with just Chrome on it is super, super simple. It's clean, and I don't have to worry about what else is calling home. You asked another question in there too. It was about my VM and then
VPNs.
VPN, right. So VPNs, I've tried several. I was using Nord, which I like for speed. Proton VPN also I use regularly. And then I also use Mulvad as well.
Okay. Yeah. I have not used Mulvad. So that gives me something to go look at.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, back in the days of hackerdom, it was one of these things where it was just you paid $5 a month and you had to load OpenVPN on your system and really do some configurations. And now they've simplified it. It's still, I think, $5 a month. And they've got more servers, more load. And I'm not getting paid to say this, but the main thing that I look for is, where are those endpoints? What are they taking from my traffic? And also, how fast will they keep the connection? Because I've tried some other ends and they greatly reduce my 1 gigabit fiber connection to my office down to a dial-up connection. And I don't like that.
Right. Yep.
So I'm curious to know, Mike, are you using any paid services as far to get data and stuff that you like?
I am. And some of those paid services are donated. I work with the National Child Protection Task Force, a nonprofit here in the United States. And a lot of great organizations have donated very expensive pieces of software that I have the privilege of being able to access. I mean, some of the go-to tools there are SpyCloud for breach data. They have excellent data. A little bit more detailed and a better interface, I think, than some of the other tools that are out there. But I also use some of the other ones. As far as all around OSINT tools, you know, there's the Swiss Army knife tool that I use is Chris Poulter's Nexus Explorer. It does all of the things that I needed to do in a good enough manner that I can move my case forward. And it's just easy that it's all one-stop shop. And there are other tools that I use, but I mean, I would say those are probably my main ones. Also, Epios.com. That's a wonderful tool for the paid level. And they're doing a great job of keeping it up to date and all. I think those are the main ones.
You know, I love the Epios, and I think that the free stuff. So I wanted to ask you about I see that the phone information is back at the paid level.
Yeah, the phone information. They go much deeper on other services, giving you more data. So a lot of the things that I do for my work will eventually go to law enforcement. So being able to tell them not only, hey, this person has an account on Pornhub, but being able to tell them the details, you know, when you run Holy yourself, that Python based tool, it only says, oh, look, it's over on that. It's on that site or that site. What Epios has done is take some of these identifications and gone a little bit farther. So they'll pull some profile information or other data, which is always very, very helpful for making it easy. And really, I mean, that's why I use those tools, is because it makes my job as an OSINT investigator a lot easier. I get more data faster. I can skip to analysis instead of how do I scrape this data or how do I make these queries.
Exactly. Okay. So analysis, you're using Nexus Explorer.
I am using Nexus Explorer. Yeah.
And is it giving you like the Multigo style maps and that sort of thing as well?
No, it does do that. I don't use it for that. Nexus Explorer is a terrific tool that aggregates a lot of other functions. It reaches out to different sources and can do a phone number search. I can do social media searches. I can do other types of searches. I generally don't do link analysis charts unless I'm doing very specific types of work, because I find that while they're great for visualization, they are not so great for putting in a report, because you can't get the level of detail that you need without zooming way in, and then you lose the overall link analysis. I'll throw one other tool that I use a lot, and that's Obsidian. That's for my note-taking. There's link analysis, mind mapping, and other types of things in there. And I just think it's a fabulous tool. I use that every single day.
You have me looking at Obsidian too. I was watching your video on it. I still have to dive in completely, but I think it looks really cool.
You know, it is really cool. I think back when you and I were working together with OSINT Curious, I was really going gung-ho on mind maps and how this is a better way to connect data. But the reality with mind maps is it's hierarchical and it's more of an outline. Whereas with Obsidian, you get that outline, but you also can get depth. You can get true connectivity between the different note records, so that when you have it auto-analyze and create its connection chart, you see that, hey, this term or this business or that person's name has been seen on all of these different pages. And it's actually brought up a lot of hidden gems for me in my OSINT investigations. Because if you're a good note taker and you're taking this person's bio and that person's bio, and then you search for a common hashtag or term that's in their bios, you can see all the places, all the different notes. You're like, oh, I didn't know that this person might be part of that organization. It's been really, really helpful.
Kind of going back to Cynthia's question, are there any of the, for example, people data sources that you use? I know there's a lot of free ones like FamilyTree now, but then there's also some really great paid ones. What kind of data sources for that do you use?
Yeah. So Nexus Explorer has some of that built in, and I mainly use that. In the United States, that's them, True People Search. Those are some of the good free ones that I use. And many times they will have some good data in them without, you know, having to go to the paid services. I do use some other tools, but, you know, they really aren't that stellar. Like, oh my God, that you have to have this or you have to use that. Especially since a lot of the work that I do also is outside of the United States, having these US focused tools is less useful.
Ah, okay. That was my next question is, where are you doing all of this? Is there any particular country?
Around the world. I'll speak about the NCPTF. Our cases have ranged from Australia and Thailand to South America, the Caribbean, and of course, the United States and Canada. And we work with law enforcement all over because law enforcement will find some child sexual abuse material and they'll redact the image or something, and then they will send that to us. And then we have to figure out where in the world this was recorded or where this person might be. So, and that could take us literally anywhere. So a lot of the mapping software, I generally don't use paid stuff, but Google Earth, Baidu Maps, Google Maps, Bing Maps, some of the other ones as well.
Yeah, my cousin did some stuff in Jakarta years ago. Yep. And it wasn't very good where it ended back up of who was doing what.
Yeah.
On the government side, which then brought us back to the US.
Absolutely. It can be very challenging, especially with certain types of cases and the fact that we're not in country. One of the great things is we get the opportunity to work with very talented law enforcement personnel all over the world and very dedicated staff. It makes it a lot more rewarding to do the work.
So what are you doing for the language?
For language, we do some translation, the Google Translate plugin that I use in my browser. People used to give Google Translate a pretty bad rap. Lately, it's gotten a lot better. So using a combination of Google DeepL or DeepL and some other translation services, depending upon where the case takes me. We've had several cases in Asia where I'll just use Baidu or use Google and Baidu, but it just depends.
You've given us an example of other things that you think are worthwhile paying for when you're for your OSINT business, for your investigations. Because I know I use a lot of free stuff. Free is always fantastic, but there's sometimes when you really should invest. And what are your key things that you invest in?
Yeah. So for me, for investing, I look at my entire business and try to figure out where am I going to save time without skimping on results. I don't like tools that create a report and you just send it off. Also, I've had the privilege of trying out a lot of different types of tools, analysis tools. And what I find is that it really depends on the work I'm doing. Like I said, right now, my best tools are a VPN and a web browser. And generally a lookup tool like Nexus Explorer. But there's a whole bunch of other tools out there that, you know, you keep in your toolbox when needed. I would say for me, breach data is probably very, very important for the work that we're doing. Although back when I was doing other types of OSINT, I'd never touched breach data. And it was a lot more about scraping large quantities of data from websites and enriching it. Just depends.
Yeah, it is always so case dependent and you know, personality dependent as well.
True. And skills too, right? I mean, it's your comfort level with dealing with, you know, Facebook records, or whether you're dealing with hundreds of thousands of lines of some software or some manifesto or whatever that's out there that you have to analyze. And also, if you're dealing with business, or you're dealing with dark web, or you're dealing with other things, that's when all those special tools come out. For like, I used to like love EXIF data and the metadata that you could find, but yeah, I know exactly. But it's with a lot of the social media sites that I'm on, scraping that out, and I don't really get that into play with that much. But in the dark web, or on a private forum, or in some of the social media apps, that data is still shared. Again, you know, over the years, I've filled up my OSINT toolbox with a whole bunch of tools. Some are more specialized and some are more general, and some depend on the kind of work that I'm doing at the time.
How about AI? What are your thoughts on that?
I love the art that I see Kirby doing. I really do. I think that AI is an interesting beast. I purposefully didn't jump on board and start trying it all out just to see what people were thinking about with how it can help the industry of open source intelligence. For me now, I'm not playing catch up, but I am dipping my toes in there for analysis for other things. Been watching what some of the OSINT leaders in AI use have been talking about. And I think that in the future, it will provide us definite ability to do things faster. Mm-hmm. As long as you have that query language down. You know, I can write database queries or Python code or whatever, but when it comes to like AI, it's another language you have to learn. Like, how do you elicit that? Yeah. So I think it's definitely going to be important as more of our tools like Bing. Now you can just ask it questions, and you ask it more like you would talk to an AI, and it gives you some pretty good results. Yeah. I think it's going to be important to understand how it works and to use
it. Yes. Totally agree. So I was wondering what, if you were doing it, or, you know, especially for like images and stuff, when you're looking at things out there, is that a real image or is it not? I mean, it's getting so good. You have to really focus on different things that you normally would have focused on anyway, you know, ears, earrings, face, color, shadows. But I'm wondering how well the AI will do, especially with voice.
Sure.
How are we going to go in and analyze these? We're going to have something very structured for moving forward on that, I think, as well. It will be a whole different side of our tradescraft.
Yep. It'll be a different discipline, like, or sub-discipline, if you will. Like, sure. We have verification and validation of misinformation or disinformation and those types of analyses. We're going to have similar things, but now we're going to put a lot more, it's likely that, or it's plausible that, that this is a person. I think our language isn't going to change, but our certainty levels are definitely going to be altered by just everybody using AI. And it's not just using it for audio and video and images, but a lot of the text that we're reading. I'm talking to people that are like, hang on, I'm writing this business contract and ChatGPT keeps giving me, you know, not great data, but I can work with it. At least gets me 75% of the way. I'm like, wow, that's incredible trust that you're putting in that AI tool.
Yeah.
A lot of the profiles and the web pages that we're going to see may have been created with these tools. Detecting it's going to be important.
That's a hard one. I've been playing with it, and it's like, if you just go in and could change a couple of things to make it more personalized as opposed to how you're getting it back from them, it's difficult to know.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are AI tools that will detect AI tools. So
they'll try.
Yeah, absolutely.
He just set the wrong one down because they knew it wasn't good enough.
I saw that. But I mean, that's what we're going to have, is we're going to have a cat and mouse game of, is this authentic or is it generated? But we had this years ago too, with the meta humans coming out of the, of some of these gaming engines and other things and deep fakes. And this is not anything new. I think what's new is the ability for the non-technical people to access and to use this technology. And, you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander too. You know, us using some of these tools for sock puppet, research account generation, or just to backstop a sock puppet. You know, I have some account that I've created on some forum, and in order to get into that forum, I want to create a website and other things. I can have, you know, these tools generate that in a matter of minutes instead of me going in and actually doing some of the more complicated things. I think it'll be helpful for us as well.
Yes, totally agree.
Okay, so you talked about what you're doing with the NCPTF. What else are you working on? I want to give you a chance to kind of plug what's going on in your life right now.
Curry. NCPTF is big, but I also have my own training company, OSINT Training Company, and that is myosint.training. And we are getting more and more classes in there, and we're beginning to start teach things via Zoom. We have a class coming up at the end of August, and then every couple months we'll do some more classes. And I'm finding it really, really, really enjoyable, actually. You know, I've been teaching open source intelligence and hacking and other things for over a decade. And, you know, having my own business that I can kind of decide where things go and what we do and who we do it for and what the tone of this is. I'm finding it to be very much more rewarding than I thought it would be.
Well, I think right now it's time for last call. And we are going to talk about a link, something that we're paying attention to online. And so, Micah, I'm letting you go ahead and go first. What specific resource have you been paying attention to lately that's caught your eye?
So my specific resource is actually two resources, and that is Mastodon and Blue Sky. Because with Twitter X's demise, my main focus right now is reconnecting with all those really amazing quality people that were on Twitter that I've now kind of lost track of. My biggest things are to reestablish that support network of people that we can reach out to say, you know, I need help, or, hey, have you seen this for the OSINT community?
Fantastic. I love those as well as Threads. It's kind of wondering to see like where it's going to end up, but I am on both of those as well.
Yeah.
Cynthia, what's your last call?
Well, that one is going to be wangle.net, WAGLE.net. But this one is a little bit different. It's for SSID numbers. Now, when you're going in and looking at this, it's not always 100%, but you can get names that people are giving to their Wi-Fi, you know, when you're going in there, and they can see that you can actually get some names from it. It's not always there. I was looking at it this morning and it's like, ooh, boy, that's not going to be helpful. But you are getting some, you know, it's a mapping, something to look at just to add another piece into like, oh, this verifies it. This says the person's name, or this is the username they use all the time, or this is the phone number, what you're getting in there. Have you used that at all, Micah? Because I saw you going like this.
Did you say Weigel.net?
W-A-G-L-E.net.
W-A-G-L-E.
You know what? I may have changed it when I went up there and wrote down the original one.
It's WIGLE.net, Weigel.net.
Yes.
Has been around for decades, since 2000, and it allows people to upload war driving things. I've been using it for years. And the other cool thing about this, Cynthia, you've seen this, the more you know, the deeper you can go. Not only do they have all that wonderful SSID or net wireless network names, which mm-hmm. sometimes have the last names of the people that live at the house yeah. or other things, but they also, if you go a little bit deeper into their website for free, they have Wi-Fi probes, which come from people's cell phones and other devices. They also have Bluetooth data that have been collected. So you have somebody's smartwatch or a TV or some other things that you're interested in tracking as far as people or devices or cars, those might have been detected.
Oh, I didn't know.
I want to add in about the Bluetooth. If you are doing any Bluetooth tracking, AirPods are a gold mine because they pick the name of the person's their account, not you don't rename your AirPods.
Oh, it's even better than I thought. I was just having some fun last night briefly playing with it. I'm like, oh, this could be really great. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. And the cool thing about it is it's 100% free. It's been free for always. And you can, I know a lot of your listeners might be privacy aware and very conscious about giving out an email address. Absolutely sign up for an email, sign up for an account there. You don't even have to give them a real email. They just need an email. In fact, in their like login rules for creating an account, they say, you don't have to give us a real email, but just give us one and that will be your username. So you can use like the example.com domain, which nobody can ever like create real accounts on. Yeah, just sign for an account, then you get all the access. And if you're somebody that's more technical, they have a free API or application programming interface. I could go on and on. It's a great resource.
They have an Android app where you just run it and you're automatically donating to them.
Yep.
Like the content, the details.
Yeah. Ah. See, really good. We just keep learning and learning.
Yep.
Well, here's my last call. Are you guys ready?
Ready.
All right. We're talking about AI. And this is not going to be something to tell whether a page is AI or not, but rather there are a bunch of things out there now that are AI fact checkers. You're going to run other things. Maybe could be AI created news, but it could be person like propaganda news. You could run it through some AI fact checkers. And I've got a couple of them right here. So fullfacts.org is the one I've seen that's been getting the most news lately.
Fullfacts what?
Fullfact.org. Oh,
okay.
There's also longshot.ai, which they have an article about the best fact-checking tools, and I'll get that URL and put that out on the show notes.
Yes.
And the Nieman Lab is also working on AI fact-checking. So this is something that's coming out quite a bit more. There's another one, FactInsect. So factinsect.com. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that they're going to use AI instead of using it to generate stuff to actually go and do the research and the fact-checking for us, which I think is a great use of AI as long as it works.
Yeah, as long as you still are going to have to check what that fact checker gave you, which is always, you know, what we have problems with, right? It's collecting the data is easy, analyzing it and fact checking it is the hard part. Yeah, but important. That's really cool, Kirby.
All right, and I think Cynthia wants to talk about one more thing before we close today.
I do. Some of you know, if you're following me on LinkedIn, at least, that I'm the president for the Osmosis Institute. Cynthia Hetherington is the founder, and she started the Osmosis Institute just October of last year is when the brainstorm came out. It had our board, and Kirby is on the board of directors as well. But this is an association for O centers. And we have lots of great things that we'll be able to provide. The website is up now. You can't get inside to all the fun things until you're actually a member. It goes through what our mission is as far as wanting to support and challenge the growth, expand the possibilities, and provide a community of members where we're developing our profession, but we're doing it together. So it's truly going to be community driven, where we want that participation from everyone. You can do different blogs. There's forums that are in there. We can add different forums. There is, when you're looking for how, you know, who's out there for the membership, you can go through and do a membership choice. We have both the private sector, military, students, government workers that come in. The key, though, is we really want you to be part of OSINT, so you are participating in it. We're putting in books, podcasts. We can add it if you got a suggestion. So we're going and we're building based on the community. There's a lot of different benefits that you can have from it, where you can get discounted pricing, you know, for the Osmosis Conference. And that one is yearly, and it's actually coming into the Osmosis Institute and Osmosis Con is all one webpage now. And I'll put that in the notes as well for that site. There's also going to be an employment hub offering jobs, internships, I'm going to start putting up some stuff for resumes as we're getting to go, because everybody's going, what does my resume need to look like? How do I get more into this? I'm just starting. So we really want to help to enhance people going further within this industry. So your searchable member profiles are great. Maybe you'll find a mentor while you're in there, because that's what we should be doing, is mentoring those students that are coming in, because I've been doing it for since we started talking about that. I've got so many people that have been calling me, how do I do this? There's preferred pricing on selected webinars, training courses, and events. We'll also be reaching out to a lot of our vendors to get us some discounts. Oh, what else? Lots of good stuff. Kirby, can you think of anything I'm missing out on?
Well, I wanted to ask, is it international?
There, it is. It's world. Okay, so we are based in New Jersey, and we are going by US, how we handle the website and so forth. But we have some folks already from all kinds of different places. We have Africa, we have the UK, we have Australia. They're just from all, you know, coming in from all over the place. So we're just starting to get in there. Micah, I will give you a code so you can get in for free.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah. And certification. Now, the biggest one is we will be doing certification. And Cynthia is actually almost finished working on that. So I'm real excited for that, because there's going to be a lot of opportunities out there. Also getting credit from other, we actually have a board of education that, an advisory board rather, excuse me, that will be handling that and getting the tests where people can get credit. It's almost like, you know, getting credit for, oh yeah, I have this CPE and I want to go somewhere to get a different person, not just to Osmosis, but go somewhere else. So we'll
get credit for taking Micah's?
Oh, absolutely. Maybe though. Let me think about that. So they'll be going out and looking at all the different stuff. And I'm sure they will be contacting you as well. But that part is not mine. But it's the certification, I think, is extremely important. And in general, it's like really having a professional and some clear guidance and some policies and ethics, because ethics will be a big thing, what we want to push. Because you need to have that. When are you looking at something, and is it really, you know, public, or is it private? And depending, as you know, when you're working on some cases that are going to court, which I've been doing that more lately, I have to be really careful where I'm getting my information from, that I can give to them, and that I am also double checking everything so that they can go in there very confidently into court. There's so much stuff going on, but we're real excited for it.
Very cool.
All right. Well, I guess that is our show for today. Thank you so much again, Micah, for being here, and Cynthia, naturally. We'll see what happens next week.
Okay.
Thank you. And don't forget to rate us on your favorite podcast app.
Also, please share so that we can continue sharing this podcast with you.